mitigate to monster. A full-blown drunk. Dick moaned. He had no mobility in his body and momentary dizziness. So he rested a little longer. When he got enough momentum to get up, however, he quickly monitored his situation. Yep, he had failed last night to drink in moderation. A mixture of gin, whiskey, and rum could be smelled in his breath. A modification in plans, he had said to his wife. Just a modest level of drinking, okay? But she could see what mode he was in. Ignored his ongoing monologue and went back to the tiny module they lived in to get away from the monster that she had married. There wasn't a single molecule of compassion left in her. He hadn't noticed the moisture in her eyes or even her departure. It was actually quite momentous that she left. She had endured their monotonous marriage much too long. She kept blaming it on mitigating circumstances. But now she had finally modified her view enough to understand that he was not a moderate alcoholic, but a full-blown drunk. And now he was on his own. Back in the alley, Dick was still trying to get mobile. He kept falling down, however, and eventually decided just to sleep it off. When he awoke the next day, he couldn't remember anything. He went home to find his wife and she was gone. Well, that calls for another drink, he said as he staggered back out in the direction of the nearest bar.
Monument to Mundane. The Monument. There were a multitude of reasons why the locals living in the multi-story apartment surrounding the area didn't like the newest monument in the park. First, the motif was too morbid. Statues of guys having their heads cut off didn't motivate anyone to improve morality. Second, it was just too mundane. Other events were more worthy of recognition. And third, the motto was weak. Remember the headless. What was that supposed to mean? Other people who frequented the park complained that the monument had changed the mood of visitors, even contributing to the increased activity of muggers. They pointed out that the base of the monument had a great hiding spot where thieves could gather and hide. The ground was often muddy there, but that was because local troublemakers were using it as a bathroom. And the statues always seemed to have mold on them. City maintenance workers could clean them as often as possible and still not get rid of it. The morale of locals sunk pretty low. When mortgage rates declined, however, it was no surprise that a motion was made to remove the monument. Officials muddled through the process in a typical bureaucratic fashion, and it seemed like it would take forever. But the motivation of the locals multiplied exponentially when multiple bodies were found murdered at the base of the monument. At the tearing down ceremony, a multifaceted crowd gathered. They cheered, drank wine, and passed out flowers to each other. Hope was restored when the monument fell. And who cared about a bunch of headless revolutionaries anyhow?
Municipal to navigate. The mythical creature. As the director of the municipal waste plant navigated through the musty waters behind the plant, he began to think that he had maybe been a little too naive. Mysterious things had been happening in this swamp. Maybe the mystical creature that locals had been talking about was real. He didn't know. But he had a nasty desire to find that myth and bring it in. When the director had used all of his naval skills to get deep into the swamp, where the waters were no longer navigable, he mustered all of this courage and stepped out into the water. He and the swamp had a mutual hatred for each other, and he was sure that some snake or crocodile was just waiting to bite him. When he looked round, he saw a myriad of strange plants. One mushroom was larger than his head. But he wasn't there for a narrative about swamp vegetation. He was here to solve a mystery. He was here, namely, to put an end to swamp mythology. That was when he heard a strange musical sound coming from behind some trees. There, standing in a clearing, was a naked creature dancing and singing. The director was astonished. It was ugly, obviously a mutation of some kind. He pulled out his gun and took aim. Then the creature saw him, and all of the muscles in its body went into action. It leaped across the clearing and knocked the gun from the director's hand. It reached up to strike him and then said in a hoarse voice, "Now you see what your plant has done to me." And with that the creature turned and ran away. The director retired and never came to the swamp again. The myth was real. Sometimes they are.
Necessitate to Nordic. A Nordic nightmare. This nocturnal creature is originally from a Nordic country, argued the wildlife biologist to his peers. That's what makes it so unique and such a nightmare for people. No one ever thinks that there are dangerous night creatures up north. They're used to large, non-toxic animals like wolves and bears. So they know how to navigate around niches where bears might be, avoid bees' nests, and not carry nectar on their person. But they never think about creatures in the air. Not at least until now. Now people are determined to neutralize this noble creature simply because they don't like its negative characteristics. They have nominated it as the number one pest and even given a derogatory nickname. They need to know, nevertheless, that its negative characteristics don't necessitate its destruction to nil. There are some advantages to the creature. It eats, for example, mosquitoes, rats, and other bugs that sometimes make people sick. And it only bites humans out of necessity. If something bigger and larger were trying to kill you, wouldn't you fight back? If bitten, the venom only affects the nerves slowly anyhow, and is cured by a simple glass of lemonade. The risk to a human life is really quite negligible. I think, therefore, that we should spend less time niggling about how to kill this creature and negotiate with the public instead to try learning how to live with it. If we neglect this opportunity to educate people and let this species be destroyed, we will regret it forever.
Norm to nuisance. The note of a nuisance. It was notable that the notorious nuisance to society was actually frequently overcome with nostalgia. This meant that he was not as noxious of a character as he was portrayed in the press, and closer to the norm than suspected. Several novels had also been written about him that exaggerated his nuances, and he didn't like this, but the public devoured the books like nourishment, adding to his notoriety. But the novelty of being famous for being bad was wearing off, and even now, as the man was riding a northbound train to a small village in upstate New York, he was thinking of notifying the press that he was retiring. His notion of happiness had changed, and now he just wanted to live quietly and nourish himself from the produce of a small farm. The notion would have made him laugh even a year ago. But he took up some paper and began to write a note that he would mail to a well-known reporter who was also, notably, as his brother. As he finished his notation, he raised his nourishing drink to his lips. A passing young man bumped into him, however, and the glass slammed into his nostrils. The pain and surprise was great. That's when his notional images flew from his mind. He stood up in anger and threw the young man from the train. Looking back in at the fear on the faces of the passengers, he handed the note to a woman too terrified to speak. "Get this to my brother," he said. Then he jumped from the train and out of the eye of the public. Some say he moved to Mexico. I still think he lives right here in New York State.
Numerate to observation. An obese woman. Bella needed a more nurturing environment. As she enumerated the reasons to leave society and move to some obscure desert oasis, she made an oath to tell no one. They would just laugh anyhow. She was obese and the object of constant obnoxious teasing. She had no friends and, as far as Bella had ever known, she had been objectified as a fat, worthless person since the day she was born. They would have no objections to her leaving. They would, in fact, probably be oblivious that she was gone. So be it. Bella took her obedient dog, Max, and left immediately. Arriving at a remote desert town, she realized that her obesity was still a problem. Numerous residents looked at her like she was worthless, and she knew that teasing would follow. She had to find another place. When she was dropped off on an oblong island with no other inhabitants, the airplane pilot laughed and yelled, "Good luck," as he flew away. He had a smirk on his face. She was obliged to wave back, but then she was finally alone. There were no obligations to society, and her only objective was survival. She would have to live off the nutrients of the local vegetation and catch her own fish. There was no way she would ever eat Max. Returning back to the mainland 2 years later, beautiful, thin Bella became a well-known nutrition expert. No one ever made the observation that she had once been obese. No one cared. They all wished they could be as beautiful as she was.
Observe to ominous. Ominous rumbling. The ominous rumblings from a once dormant volcano were a bad omen. The town at its base was immediately declared off-limits, and all occupants were evacuated. The oligopoly that had failed to control the market of the town became obsolete, and one man was put in charge, Mr. Red. Mr. Red became obsessed with keeping people from returning to town. Even when the volcano stopped rumbling, he put obstacles up on the road. He made it a criminal offense to be caught there. And he even put people in jail for arguing with him. He said they were there because they had become an obstruction to justice. But no one could ever obtain permission to renew occupancy. And former residents began to complain about Mr. Red's obsessive behavior. They even observed that Mr. Red had increased the occurrence of his own visits back into town. That was definitely odd, and off-handed comments were made that they should offer Mr. Red an opportunity to retire or be fired. The next day, everyone gathered their offspring and set out for town together. When they smelled an odor on the outside of town, however, their desire to return was almost offset. Something strange had happened. They were all shocked to see the town when they arrived. Women screamed and men broke down and cried. It had been destroyed, and not by a volcano. Mr. Red had rebuilt the town in his image. He smiled and welcomed them home. If the police had not been surrounding him, he would have been murdered. As it turned out, no one ever returned to occupy the town. An eruption destroyed everything the following year, and Mr. Red was left destitute.
Omit to order. The operation. Michelle knew something onerous was happening, when her vision became opaque. She omitted to inform her parents for months, however, and only told them when her eyes began to ooze. They rushed her to the hospital, and an operation was planned for the next day. Ever the optimist, Michelle did not feel oppressed by the threat of blindness. The optic experts orchestrated a marvelous team of doctors. A few opted to not participate. They opposed the use of the new optical tools that the team favored. They said that optimum success would occur with traditional instruments. The head doctor disagreed, however, saying that that was not an option. His orders stood firm. When the opponents talked to Michelle, she almost lost her optimism. She could sense the onset of blindness, and she was becoming scared. But their concerns had the opposite effect. Michelle and her parents only wanted to use the newest methods. The head doctor had persuaded them earlier that this was the best course of action. When the surgery began, the experts orbited Michelle like satellites around the Earth. They operated for hours, and the ongoing tension in the air became oppressive. After they had rotated teams twice, the surgery was declared a success. The doctors congratulated each other. Michelle awoke the following day to extreme pain in her eyes. The doctors were all called back, and Michelle went into surgery again. Everyone lost in the end. The new technology had destroyed her eyes completely. Now she would be blind forever. Michelle learned to live with blindness. The technology was banned, and the head doctor was stripped of his license. Not all surgeries have happy endings.
Organ to outnumber. Outbreak in the outback. The outfit had only been in the outback for several weeks when they lost their orientation. They had orientated themselves earlier to Ayers Rock, but that had disappeared somehow, and there was nothing to see but desert. Their outlook was dim. They were just oscillating about whether to continue or turn back to where they had originated that day when Mill came upon a small stream outlet. They all drank heartily. When they looked up, aborigines surrounded them. Several were dressed in beautiful but simple ornamentation, and one was wearing a belt made of animal organs. Clearly outnumbered, Mills held up his hands and made an outline of Ayers Rock in the air. They understood and, pointing in one direction, turned to go the other. They seemed otherwise unwilling to help. Just then, there was an outbreak of commotion among the aborigines, and one of them came running over to Calloway, one of the members of the outfit. The outcry of the aborigine was great, and their group was suddenly quite upset. "This man is an outlaw to us," said one aborigine, suddenly in very orthodox English. he stole some valuable ornaments from another tribe. They ousted him from the area, but now he's back. We can't let him leave again. Members of the outfit looked at Calloway in a new light. He hadn't been one of the more outgoing members of the group, but he had been reliable. No one wanted to let the Aborigines take him, but they had no choice. We'll take you back to your original location. Then you can tell local police what we're doing. They know we're looking for him.